I'm Melissa Harris-Perry in for Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. Now, before we dive into the show today, we wanted to extend a big welcome to our new listeners tuning in to hear us for the very first time from WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It's good to have you with us. But now let's get right to it. We start today with Haiti, a country struggling in the wake of last week's assassination of President Jovenel Moïse. Following the assassination, Haiti's police force has killed at least four people that it suspects in the president's killing and has arrested more than a dozen, including two who Haitian officials say are American citizens. But the reasons for this assassination are still relatively unknown. According to the Miami Herald, in March of this year, polling showed that around 57% of people in Haiti disapproved of Moïse's party, and Moïse had drawn condemnation from global leaders for not holding parliamentary elections at their scheduled time more than a year ago. But despite the instability that characterized much of Moïse's time in office, what comes next could be worse for Haiti's residents. The country is currently under a form of political control similar to martial law. And in the days since the assassination, two different leaders have claimed that they are now serving as Haiti's prime minister. The current interim government has requested assistance from the U.S. military, but thus far, President Biden has resisted, choosing only to send a small team to assess the situation. Now, these current conditions are being closely watched by world leaders, including the Biden administration and the United Nations. But previous intervention by the U.S. and other global powers in Haiti has often had disastrous consequences.
Years since the devastating earthquake that ravaged Haiti. Critics have faulted the efforts of international donors, including the U.S., for failing to deliver on pledges while exerting excessive control over the reconstruction process.
United Nations peacekeepers, there to help, are accused of adding to the harm. A study claims they fathered hundreds of babies, then abandoned the young mothers, some only children themselves.
Last year, Nepalese soldiers under UN command were accused of contaminating water, leading to a deadly cholera outbreak, killing thousands of people.
For more on all of this, we're joined now by Gary Pierre Pierre, founder and editor-in-chief of the Haitian Times. Gary, great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Melissa.
And also with us is Francois Pierre-Louis, professor of political science at Queens College at the City University of New York, who specializes in Haitian politics and immigration. Francois, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Melissa.
So, Gary, I want to begin with you. What has been the impact in Haiti in the immediate aftermath of this assassination?
Well, the impact has been a shock from the population. Jovenel was not very popular in Haiti, and I would say that that poll was generous to the reality on the ground. He was deeply unpopular for a host of reasons, but nevertheless, his assassination brought people together because people said, well, as much as we dislike Jovenel, he was our president. And then foreigners came and killed him. So right now, there's a period of mourning. I'm afraid the unknown is, what would the people's reaction be? I think that one of the reasons why the so-called Prime Minister Claude Joseph asked for U.S. intervention because he doesn't know what the reaction of the people would be. And also, more importantly, what the gang leaders' reaction would be if they decide to come together and, God forbid, attack, and it would be total chaos. And so right now, the situation is very fluid. We're assessing what's going on, and we're waiting because there is a mourning period of 15 days, and so we wait.
Francois, as we just heard from Gary there, that reference to the gangs and to gang violence, I don't think we can really even think about this assassination and the responses to it without understanding something about the past few months. Can you walk us through this context a bit?
Well, since Jovenel Moïse became president, there has been a total decline of political order in Haiti in terms of not only the political institutions were dismembered by President Jovenel. He didn't renew the mandate of parliament for new elections. The local officials, all the mayors, were appointed by President Jovenel right after their term ended. And also he fired several members of the Supreme Court. So actually right now you only had 11 people running elected officials in Haiti, with Jovenel Moïse being one of them. Right now, you only have 10 former senators as elected officials in Haiti. So there has been a complete breakdown of the state institutions in Haiti. But one thing I think we should be aware of also, this was an insider job in terms of the killing of President Jovenel Moïse. And there has been a lot of emphasis on the gangs and outside influence, but no one has really spoken about the insider going in inside the bedroom of a president without any shot being, at anyone. No police officers, no security of the president was affected. No one in the security was affected. So therefore, they claim the gangs, they claim outside, but they don't really talk about the breakdown of the institutional process that led to this crisis.
That's so helpful. Gary, can you speak a bit on that? I heard you say in your first response, this sense of outsiders having come in and killed our president, right? Whether we like him or not, that is such an indication of crisis. But we're also hearing from Francois here, this notion of this being in part an insider job and responsibility. Can you speak on that a bit?
The rule of protecting an asset, if you will, is that you're the first to be fired, to be shot at. In this case, no one, according to reports anyway, was shot from the presidential security details. And they went inside his bedroom, which I understand from a credible sources, that room had a door, security door with a code to get in. And that was breached as well. So it brings one to think about, well, this was clearly an inside job, because otherwise, how did this happen? There's a lot of suspicions about who it could have been. We don't know right now at this moment exactly who it is. And, you know, frankly, we may not ever find out, given Haiti's history of dealing with these high profile killings. I mean, we can think about the journalist Jean-Dominique, who was gunned down in front of his radio station more than 20 years ago. Even today, we don't even know who was the culprit. And so we await, hopefully, with the team of FBI agents on the ground in Haiti, they'll be able to piece together what happened and hopefully bring someone to justice.
Francois, you've talked here about the breakdown of these total government systems. We have two different politicians now claiming the title of prime minister. Why is there confusion about who's currently in charge?
Well, a few days before he was assassinated, Jovenel Moïse fired Claude Joseph, who has now claimed to be the prime minister. And then he had a decree out to put in Ariel Henry as a new prime minister. In fact, on Wednesday when he was assassinated, Wednesday morning, on that very same day, he was going to install Ariel Henry. Ariel Henry was supposed to take the oath of office at that time. So technically, Claude Joseph is not the legitimate prime minister. And officially, Henry is not the legitimate prime minister either. So therefore, you really have a real power vacuum there, because there's no one at any level of government that can replace Jovenel Moïse. And since no one expected him to die so suddenly, and his intention was really to turn upside down on the state institutions by revamping the constitution, writing a new one, putting in an intelligence service, by trying to dispossess many of the members of the business class. So therefore, you have total chaos right now. And the fact that he was relying on the gangs to control and suppress the population and push in his agenda, you really have what you really have right now are the gangs are the ones that have the power in Haiti.
Okay. So that language of the total chaos and the actual deployment, the use of gangs rather than of what we might think of as sort of a state police force to keep law and order, even in a one might call a dictatorship. Just, Gary, can you put that in context, that sense of total chaos, together with the COVID-19 crisis on the island? Because Haiti does not have access to vaccines. The numbers are going up and are likely underreported. How is the coronavirus also impacting this sense of total chaos?
Well, the Delta variant has been wreaking havoc on Haiti right now. As you mentioned correctly, we've been getting underreported numbers. And it is within that climate that Haiti is dealing with the constitutional crisis that's going on top of a security crisis, on top of a social and economic crisis. And again, the unknown here, the unknown factor, as Francois said, are the gangs, because the gangs have been the de facto running Haiti. They decide when people can come out, when people can have to stay in. They dictate the terms of law. They are the rule of law. And in fact, the police have tried many times to try to infiltrate and try to dismantle the gangs with very botched results. Just a few months ago, they tried to go into a gang stronghold in a neighborhood called Village de Dieu. And Dieu means God. And God was not with the police at the time because they were basically massacred. And they had tanks that were confiscated by the gang members that reportedly the government had to pay the gangs to retrieve these tanks. And frankly, what Francois said is correct. Total chaos. Why? The reason that we are not seeing that yet is because there hasn't been any street protests, violent protests or so. But rest assured, there is no one in charge right now in Haiti. Despite what the UN may tell us that it's Claude Joseph who's prime minister, well, no, he's not. He was fired. The Ariel Henry's nomination was published in a Monitor. The Monitor is the official publication of the Haitian government. Once something is published in the Monitor, it's official. The fact that he was not sworn in is purely ceremonial. So therefore, you know, Henri legally should be the prime minister, but the UN has decided that Claude Joseph is their guy and they're going to go with him for better or for worse.
Francois, I want to talk a little bit about the request for U.S. troops. I think for me, as I hear the request, on the one hand, I understand our sense of geopolitical and humanitarian interest in what is happening, but I also cannot help but to think about 1994's Operation Uphold Democracy, which restored Aristide to power, but did not make circumstances in the long term better in Haiti. What are your thoughts about U.S. intervention in this moment?
I think sending U.S. troops to Haiti would be a total mistake for several reasons. First, what is happening right now? The narrative is being pushed and promoted by members of the same group that supported Moïse and that are still in relationship with members of PHTK, which is the political party of Moïse. And what they're trying to do is having the U.S. troops come in to protect them from different situations in Haiti. That would be a grave mistake. Secondly, the narrative also is excluding many of the democratic organizations in Haiti, the grassroots groups, the groups that have been fighting against corruption, the groups that have held, Moïse to be accountable to the expenses of the Petro-Caribe funds that he had squandered. He himself took money from those funds when he was a private businessman. And third, all the summary killings and the massacres that have taken place in Haiti under his administration. So what they're hoping to do is to bring the Marines back to Haiti to protect these people so that impunity continues in Haiti. And I think the biggest mistake the UN has made, and sometimes the US, is to exclude those organizations, those individuals, those groups such as the church the members of the Protestant and Catholic Church, the grassroots organizations, the students, the unions. In fact, 95% of the population that are represented by these organizations are excluded from the discourse right now. So therefore, that's why if the U.S. comes in, it would be reinforcing the status quo that has put Haiti in this situation currently.
So, Gary, I'm wondering about ways that the U.S. and or the U.N. might be able to leverage its power or its relationships in Haiti in such a way that actually do elevate the voices and the capacity for exactly those organizations and individuals who are Haitian society in the ways that Francois just laid out for us.
Well, I think I agree with Francois, absolutely. There's no need for U.S. military intervention, but I think there is room for U.S. intervention in terms diplomatically, politically. I've been urging the White House to really look at a different approach. We need to engage the Haitian American community. I've written a column, outlined some of the folks that I think are in a position to really lead such a Haiti task force. Because Haitian Americans the real stakeholders in this crisis. We have friends or family back home. Haitian Americans send more than $2 billion annually back home in remittances. And so in the past, they've been ignored, largely put in aside. We've been spectators. I think right now we need to be players in this situation because everything that's been talked about has been tried and has failed. We need to push the reset button and look at, okay, how can we actually get this right this time? The civil society members that Francois has spoken about are never engaged by the powers that be in Washington or the UN, even the Organization of American States. When they come in, they just speak with what they think are the important people in the government in the private sector, and they ignored the civil society, which, as you all know, is what is the backbone of any society.
That story of ignoring civil society and grassroots leaders and organizations in order to just speak with who is perceived as important. I mean, I just spent the week in New Orleans, and that language describes to me so much of what happened in my beloved city immediately following the Hurricane Katrina disaster. I'm wondering, and Francois, maybe you can weigh in on this, as Gary is talking about this connection with Haitian Americans, with stakeholders here in the States, there's also this issue of Haitian immigrants who have temporary protected status. I'm wondering sort of where the Biden administration is standing on the extension of that program. I know there's been extension, but whether or not people are still being deported, particularly back into an island that is in this kind of chaos.
In fact, yes. As of last week, there was a number of people were deported back to Haiti. The program has not ended yet. And sending people back to Haiti in this chaotic situation is really inhuman in that sense. But the other thing I would add to what Gary mentioned is the burden of the Haitian diaspora, Haitian Americans, in terms of economic, social, and political, on their relatives back home. Whenever Haiti is in a crisis, Haitians in the diaspora, primarily in the United States, have to send more money back home to support their children, their family members, and their friends. So as a result, economically, it impoverished the Haitian Americans in the United States. Therefore, it is in the interest of the American government and other governments where you have large Haitian residents to try to take care of the situation in Haiti, because that would alleviate the burden of their own Haitian Americans and other nationals. The other thing also, I believe that it would be impossible for the Biden administration to handle the number of refugees that will be coming. They may not be land on the shore of Miami, but they're definitely going to be on Guantanamo Bay or some parts of the Caribbean.
François Pierre-Louis is a professor of political science at Queens College at the City University of New York. And Gary Pierre-Pierre is the founder and editor-in-chief of the Haitian Times. Thank you so much to both of you.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
So how are Haitians in the U.S. processing the news? Last Friday, we spoke to three people deeply connected to the island to get their reactions to the situation.
My name is Rico Dupree. I'm the station director at Radio Soleil. That's a 24-hour Haitian radio station here based in Brooklyn.
My name is Marlène Bastien, and I'm the executive director of Family Action Network Movement, FAM. I was born in Haiti, but I've been living here for the past 40 years.
Paul Christian Nanfi, lead organizer of the Family Action Network Movement, and I'm a person of Haitian origin.
It was not until 5:30 in the morning that I heard something that sounded like a phone call.
I heard the news about the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse while I was getting ready to go for my morning walk.
And I got up and I said, my goodness, I saw over 25 to 30 phone calls.
My home phone was ringing off the hook at the same time with my cell phone. And usually when that happens, that means something horrible is happening.
So I woke up, I was working on revising a document, and then, you know, there were people in my house, including one of my sons, who were saying, you know, Jovenel Moïse has been killed. You know, the former president of Haiti has been killed.
When I received the call, she informed me that President Jovenel Moïse was assassinated. I was really shocked.
I was shocked.
This was a shock. I got on whatever media I could, you know, NPR, CNN, the internet, you know, to figure out what information can we get. Because there were reports also that the First Lady had been killed. And so, you know, this was always, oftentimes we say in Haiti, the truth is worth more than gold. So we were seeking to get to the bottom of exactly what was happening. As details of what has happened has emerged, it's become very, very clear that this is a very, very gruesome, brutal act that happened, which was not an act in isolation, but which follows many, many, many other murders. We've had massacres going on in Haiti since the last week of June until the present, where, you know, many dynamic, you know, feminist leaders, journalists, many people have been killed by death squads and by armed gangs in really horrible fashion. So this is just something that, as details emerge, it becomes more and more worrying for us.
I'm a fierce critic of the regime of Jovenel Moïse, the deceased president. That is well known, not only of himself, but of his regime, the whole PHTK regime. Definitely we deplore his death, the way he was killed. That's not what we wanted. We wanted him to cede power and to avail himself for the justice system to examine his actions and have him pay for the countless crimes that he committed in the country.
Whether you were part of the majority, from the civil society, from the opposition groups, from the religious sectors, business sectors who have been organizing against him, or whether you were part of the minority that supported him, right? It is shocking. It is shocking for a sitting president to be assassinated in his own home, and his wife shot three times while his children were in the house. So whether you were for him or against him, whether you agreed with President Jovenel Moïse's politics or not, the fact that he could be assassinated in his own home highlights the high level of instability and violence that permeated the island over the past few months.
My youngest daughter is in Haiti right now. It's a cause of concern, but she's not in Port-au-Prince right now. So that's really a source of relief, although we are still in a situation of uncertainty because she's in school here in Miami-Dade County. And it's very important for us to for us to get her back. And because of the closing of the border, the closing of flights, you know, it's been a very, very, very fluid and uncertain situation about logistically how we can even get her back to school, because we just don't know what's going to happen next, how long this is going to be going on. We don't know.
I still have most of my family in Haiti. I have a lot of aunts, cousins and uncles, and there is a lot of confusion there now. People are very scared and concerned that this could degenerate into more violence, because as I indicated, leading to this, a lot of people have been forced out of their homes because armed gangs have been wreaking havoc in people's lives, kidnapping people, kidnapping women and girls, because in times of high level of political instability and violence, women and girls usually fare worse. And for the past few months, the Haitian women and Haitian girls have been kidnapped, raped and killed and thrown on piles of trash. The situation has been chaotic, to speak mildly. But the people of Haiti now, they are very concerned that this could get worse. And given what they've been through for the past few months, you can understand that they are very scared. There is an state of siege in the nation. A lot of them are confused about that. The airport is closed. The police has occupied the streets. So people are scared.
What we want for Haiti is what everyone wants for the country. It's to really allow democracy to flourish. And when we talk democracy, what does it mean? It simply means allow people to choose who's going to lead them. And that has been denied Haitians, the country, for years.
My message to our brothers and sisters now is that, yes, yeah, we know you've been yearning for peace. You've been yearning for security. But now, with this crisis, there is a possibility to do it. But we have to unite. You have to unite your strength. You have to unite your voices and create a space for every voice to be represented and to come out with a short-term and long-term strategy to move this beautiful, beautiful island nation forward. Haiti will not die. Haiti will rise. Haiti will rise. But we are asking our friends to let Haiti leave and to heed the voices of the Haitian people, because after all, they are the masters of their own destiny.
The voices there are of Marlene Bastien, Rico Dupuy, and Paul Christian Nomfi, speaking about Haiti.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.